that estate. And a girl I knew, one who promised she would wait, that she'd ever be true. Since I've gone out, her teeth wet, didn't mean a word she said. Oh, but how my poor heart bled. But what's a fella to do? Sunshine in her laughter, just like the state they named her after. Gone are the days, the very days I'm dreaming of, and still I seem to hear her say, will you be back? Will you be back? Back to the Carolina, your love.
Good evening, friends, and welcome to another edition of the Antique Phonograph Music Program. Oh, our marathon is all over, and it's back to the old routine of playing records and entertaining you without asking for money. All right. Well, I'm back with my show, and tonight I have a guest in the studio who it's her third time here with me, and I have Merle Sprinzen with me. Hi, Merle. How are you?
Hi, Mac.
Welcome back once again.
Thank you for the invitation.
And Merle's specialty are the Little Wonder Records. Why don't you explain to everyone what Little Wonder Records are, Merle, to those who don't know?
Sure. Little Wonder Records came about in 1914. They were alive as a music, as records from 1914 to 1923. They essentially broke the patent that was held by the majors in 1914 when they were released, and essentially popularized recorded music for the first time. Records were available at a price point that most people could afford then, and millions and millions and millions of them were sold, and made essentially the majors respond by cutting their prices.
And what were they costing when they were first released?
10 cents.
10 cents.
And they're about 5.5 inches across, recorded only on one side,
right?
And play about a minute and a half to 2 minutes worth of music.
Yeah, they're very short.
Quite short.
They're like the furthest distance from us today because, yeah, it's one thing to play a 3-minute record and that's all you have, and even a 2-minute cylinder. But this is even shorter. You had to really keep on getting up and changing your records with these.
Very committed.
Yeah.
But when there wasn't radio and television, I mean, as I'm sure all your listeners know, there was really no way to hear music unless you did it live. And so this created a way for people to enjoy music that was of substantial quality, different than live performance.
All right. So tell us what we heard first there, Merle.
Well, that was probably the most famous of all Little Wonder records. It's record number 20, called Back to the Carolina You Love, sung by Al Jolson before he was famous. I thought for the show today, rather, unlike the shows that I'd done the last two times, I would focus now on the performers who recorded on Little Wonders. So rather than doing a kind of cross-section through the whole playlist, I would focus on some performers, and so I thought I'd start with the most famous one.
All right, so let's continue now, and tell us what we're going to hear on this next record.
Well, the next is from Maurice Burkhardt. He owes me $97. Recorded in 1915. As you're winding it up, there were various themes through Little Wonders, one of which was a Yiddish theme. And so the next two, this one and the one that follows, sort of come from that era.
Thank you.
week in bed. Soon the doctor came around and said, there's no use crying, the man is dying, he can't live very long. Send my son here to my side, they heard the old man say. I've got something to tell him before I pass away. Soon his son was sitting by his bed. What's the matter, Papa dear, he said. The old man said, my son, before my days are done, I want you to know. Corn owes me $97, and it's up to you to see that corn pays. I sold a lot of goods to Rosenstein and Son on an IOU for 90 days. Levi brothers don't get any credit. They owe me for 100 yards of lace. If you promise me, my son, to collect from everyone, I can die with a smile upon my face.
It is here at the Antique Phonograph Music Program. I don't exactly know what we're doing next, and it's a live program. So Merle says she wants to talk a little bit before we go on, so let's do that.
Well, I just thought we should sort of end one sort of genre before we started the next. So that was Rhoda Bernard singing, obviously, Gutmann is a Hootmann now.
Now, a lot of, usually most names I recognize from other labels who have recorded on Little Wonder. But she's someone I'd never heard before because I know they have a lot of popular artists.
Yep, and I can't say that I'm intimately familiar or even remotely familiar with her, but she is apparently highly prized and collected as a Yiddish performer. So I thought I'd include her here as well. Mm-hmm. Now we're kind of shifting genres altogether and moving to the far west to play some Hawaiian tunes, which came on Little Wonder from Lewis and Farrar. So we'll hear two of these.
Right. They were a husband and wife team. So they made a lot of records and doing the slide guitar thing.
Wonderful. So we've got two coming up. The first is favorite Hawaiian hula medley, which is pretty funny to fit a medley into less than 2 minutes. And another called Yaddy Caddy Kitty Caddy Coo.
I love that one.
Thank you.
Well, the Victor record of that is much faster. It's like double time.
Well, and it's always impossible to tell. I actually play these sometimes at around 80 on my electric pickup because it just is impossible to know what speed they were recorded at.
Right, the exact speed.
Right.
Well, I would think that a lot of these records would be recorded faster so they could get them in more, but that one is really slow compared
to the Victor version. Yep.
So, all right, some nice Hawaiian music from Louise and Ferrer. All right.
I'm sure I mispronounced it when I said it. It's Louise and Ferrer.
Louise and Ferrer?
Yep.
Okay. All right, so what do we have coming up next?
Next are two by Gene Green. The first is the attribution is not certain, so I'd be very interested in your point of view and that of your listeners as to whether it is or not. I should say that all of these artists, the attributions of these artists are not mine. They come from a group of collectors who've pieced this information together by combining their wisdom, because on the labels themselves, the artists are not attributed. And we haven't as yet discovered any files from the company that indicate who was on which recording. So it's just anybody's good guess.
So you're really kind of doing the research that's taking this genre of records, this arm of the Columbia Record Company, and finding all you can about it and really writing the history of it.
Right, exactly. And everything that I know, I put on my website, which is littlewonderrecords.com, which is really the repository of everything I've been able to discover about Little Wonder Records and their sister, the Bubble Books.
And what was I going to say? That's not good to say in radio. What was I going to say? there's I guess finding the information of exactly who the artists were by catalog number would be kind of the holy grail of Little Wonder Records.
Exactly. So, and I have some feelers out that may actually result in that information.
Uh-huh.
We shall see.
Right.
But as of this point, it's really just collectors' ears that are doing it.
Because you never know with this stuff. You think it's gone. We know a lot of the records were burned and thrown away for a lot of these companies, but you never know what someone saved and will turn up.
Exactly.
Always. Okay, so let's hear probably Gene Green.
Probably Gene Green.
Which one are we doing first?
This one.
I'm up and wander down to dreamy Chinatown, the home of Ching-a-ling. It's fine, I must declare, but I am going where I can see the real, real thing. I'll soon be there in a bamboo chair, for I've got my fare from here to Shanghai. Just picture me sipping oolong tea, served by a Chinaman who speaks away up high. Hakamai, I'll eat my chop suey with a pair of wooden sticks, and I'll have a hot thing leaf doing all his magic tricks. I'll get my mail from a pale pig tail, for I mean to sail from here to Shanghai. Good luck and good
Well, I'm not really sure. I don't remember Gene Green doing that gravelly voice thing. I have about three of his records, but I suppose a good approach for you might be is if someone thinks it's Gene Green, try to play the record side by side.
Right.
Especially if it's the same title.
Right, exactly.
That might be helpful in further identifying them.
Because
I know Gene Green has a very Al Jolson soundy voice. And those didn't, I don't know, they almost sound like two different artists for me, but the first one didn't sound like it's in really good shape.
It's not in as good a shape as the second one,
right.
Clearly. I mean, and that is one of the problems with these records, because they were never sold in sleeves. And they were relatively so inexpensive and then so used.
Yeah.
It was, and not used on the very best equipment, because the people who bought them couldn't afford the very best equipment.
Right.
They are very abused in most of their form.
I'm sure, just like with cylinders and disc records, you find new old stock occasionally, unused records.
Very, very rarely.
Rarely, huh?
Very, very rarely.
They show up from time to time with the phonograph, regular 78s. You just look at them, you're like, wow, this is pristine. And then the telltale sign for me is I look at the label, and there's usually a squiggle line by the spindle hole where someone's, you know, trying to find the hole, and if there's no marks in there, it's like, aha, it looks like it was never even placed on a spindle.
Yep, I would say in my entire collection, I may have kind of less than 5%, maybe even 1%, that are in what I would call virtually unplayed condition.
Right.
They were very, very used.
Yeah. Right. That's what they were sold for.
Yep.
All right.
So the titles of those were King of the Bungalows and From Here to Shanghai, obviously. Next up are, again, of questionable attribution, but perhaps, Fred Van Epps. The first is That Broadway Chicken Walk, and then the second is Beware of Pink Pajamas, which is kind of one of those fun titles.
It is.
You want to start that one up?
I don't know how.
Okay. It stays on. Come on, stay on. Thank you.
you know, with someone's voice, you can kind of say, yeah, that sounds like that person, but I've got lots of banjo records, and how can you really tell?
Have absolutely no idea.
You know, sometimes when I'll listen to a guitar player and say, I can tell by his tone, it's that guitar player, but there's a lot of processes involved in the guitar itself, the amplifier, the recording. But with these, it's I don't know how you could ever tell.
I have no idea, and I don't know who the person was who created the attribution in the discography.
Right.
So I don't know on what basis they may have made that attribution. So I throw it out as sort of the mystery to be solved.
Right, right. Well, it was a good banjo player, that's for sure.
It was certainly fun.
In a certain way, it's interesting that the approach was the records stand on their own merits. It wasn't a time where you've got to get the latest Elvis Presley record because it's Elvis. It's just, here's the music for you to enjoy. It doesn't matter who it is.
Well, and it certainly didn't matter to these people who had absolutely no other options. So they just wanted music that they could bring into their house that they didn't have to play themselves.
Right. Didn't want to hear Aunt Martha get on the Jew's harp again. We're like, enough of that.
Or to pay the cost of the sheet music to get some new sound.
Right.
I mean, sheet music at that time was fairly expensive as well. And so you then had that one tune that you could play over and over again.
Oof.
So these, for 10 cents, I mean, which is not to say that 10 cents was nothing in those days.
It was, you know, it's roughly 20 times at this point, so.
But you could bring it into your house and bring another one into your house and another and another.
Right.
So they were sold through Sears catalogs. I mean, so it really hit everywhere in America. Millions and millions and millions.
All right. So what do we have next?
Next we have a group called the Farber Sisters.
This is, by the way, another sisters I'd never heard on any other phonograph records.
There is a person that I know who is a big fan of these two women who... And he's the person I'm trusting to say that's who these people are, who has collected lots and lots and lots of their music. So I'm presuming that they recorded in other places than Little Wonder. I, in fact, found a month or so ago a piece of sheet music that had their picture on the cover. So that was kind of fun. So this is called How'd You Like to Be My Daddy? And it's a character duet.
I have this as a accordion duet by another group, actually. Let's put that on.
I need you over here.
I'm coming. I was just finishing saying my thing. Start the record.
The Farber Sisters, probably. You're listening to the Antique Phonograph Music Program, heard every 2 weeks. And I am your host, Mac, with the machines live in the studio, cranking them up. And we have the microphone stuck inside the horn. And tonight is a show of all Little Wonder records, brought to you with my guest, Merle Sprinzen, who has a website called littlewonderrecords.com. where you could learn everything you ever wanted to know about Little Wonder Records. Even there's stuff you probably didn't know you wanted to know about Little Wonder Records that you could learn there. And so she's sharing all her records here with us tonight. And so tell everyone how you got into this, Merle.
I got into it because my parents, when I was a little girl, went to an auction and brought home a portable phonograph player that folds up into a case that's like a brownie box camera.
Right, right.
That apparently went to war, went to Europe with a soldier because it came with a whole bunch of other kind of war stuff, soldier uniforms, kits and stuff, and came with 40 some odd Little Wonder records. So I'd played those records when I was a little girl and had never sort of looked around from time to time for others, but never really had found any. But I had a feeling there had to have been more because the numbers on my records went from, I think, number two or three up into the 1500 or 1600. So I figured there had to be more than the 40 that I had. And many, many years later for work, I had to go onto eBay when eBay was brand new and e-commerce was brand new. And I had an e-commerce job and needed to understand a little bit more about what eBay was up to. So went onto the site, quickly learned, saw that in order to understand it, I'd need to look at a few auctions. Thought I'd type in Little Wonder Records and see what happened. Well, up came some auctions. I bid on them and won them. And, you know, as they say, the rest is history. Right. But I then started being fairly serious about collecting them. And then happened upon Tim Brooks's discography, which had just been published, and then realized that there was this whole very important history behind them, and then became my own detective and added to that history.
And that's how it is with a lot of these branches of phonograph records and machines. It's really the collector who ends up writing the history because the companies don't care about the information. It's already been thrown away, and it's up to the collectors to do all this so that future generations will be able to know what they need to about the Little Wonder Records.
Yep, exactly.
All right. So what do we have next?
Next we have some of the earliest recorded jazz, one of the earliest recorded jazz musicians, not the very, very earliest. Tim Brooks has this new book called Lost Sounds, which really charts a lot of the early black and jazz musicians. But Wilbur Sweatman is one of the groups that started the jazz movement, and we're going to hear three of them. The first is Everybody's Crazy About the Doggone Blues.
But I'm happy.
And the next one is Dallas Blues, and then the third one we'll hear is A Good Man Is Hard to Find.
Okay, let's put this one on the other machine.
Yeah.
Because we're having Little Wonder Records. They're very small, and they don't like to play easily. And we've had issues before, and we're continuing to have issues with them. But you know what? I think I said this in the first show. These are probably issues people had when they bought these records and put them on their phonographs also. So it's just like 1918 again.
Thank you.
Okay, so there are the Blues represented also on the little Wonder Records there. And, all of those records definitely I've heard on other recordings. One couple on Cylinder. Yeah, there were very popular tunes of the period and all recorded right around that same time also.
Yep, and Archaeophone just came out with a new CD just featuring the music of Wilbur Sweatman. Mm-hmm. It turns out that one of the tunes, not one that I have here, I think it's Lonesome Blues, was only recorded on Little Wonder Record. And so one of my records is actually on that CD.
So then, as we know, when I say the same song, it's a different version recorded on different labels. So
Right. Whereas
here's a song like, say, for example, Everybody's Crazy About the Doggone Blues. There are instrumental versions and there's vocal versions, but obviously the Little Wonder one is one that's its own thing because it was recorded in that studio that day. All these songs were not recorded for other labels is what we're discovering also.
Right, and it's not the case, although there was some disputes about this among early collectors, that all they did was shorten, that is mechanically shorten, recordings that had been created for other labels or at other times. And that seems to not be the case. These were recorded strictly for Little Wonder Records in their short forms.
Yeah, that's pretty obvious when you hear them because they have a different sound.
Yeah. They're very different. They may have been recorded, I mean, in some instances, recorded on the same day.
Sure.
But these were recorded purely for use on Little Wonders.
All right.
So I thought we'd stay in the same jazz theme mm-hmm. and turn next to a different group called the Yerkes Jazz Arimba Orchestra. And we'll be hearing two tunes. The first is called Wee Wee Marie, which I think is just completely adorable on the label because, of course, they didn't know that people would know how to pronounce O-U-I. And so it actually says W-E-E-W-E-E in parentheses after it, just so that you'd be sure you knew what you were listening to.
Okay.
And the second one is Stick in the Mud. Thank you.
All right. I have a few Yerkes Jazzarimba orchestra cylinders, and it's got a signature xylophone accompanying the melody. So there's little clues that let you know that you're on the right track. They're not definitive things, but because even then artists were trying to sound like other artists. But it's all the information that you assemble, and eventually you come up with an answer.
And it's pronounced Yerkes. That's news to me.
I'm not sure. I always have said Yerkes. Have someone said Yerkes? I don't know.
I have no idea. It's just what it looked like to me written down.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. All right. So we're going to continue now with an artist who's very familiar to listeners of the Antique Phonograph Music Program, Mr. Billy Murray.
Yep. He didn't record a huge number on Little Wonder, but I thought I'd bring along the ones that he did. They're always in very high demand when I have extras for people, so I thought I'd bring them along to share. So we'll hear three: The Alcoholic Blues, Can You Tame Wild Women, and Everyone Wants a Key to My Cellar.
My country, indeed I do, but oh, that war has made me blue. I like fighting, that's my name, but fighting is the least about the fighting game. When Mr. Hoover said to cut my dinner down, I never even hesitate, I never frown. I cut my sugar, I cut my coal, but now they dug deep in my soul. I've got the blues, I've got the blues, I've got the alcoholic blues. No more beer, my heart could tear. Goodbye, whiskey, you used to make me pretty. So long, highball, so long, gin. Oh, tell me when you're coming back again. Blues, I've got the blues. Since they amputated my boo. Lordy, lordy, war is, well, you know, so I don't have to tell. Oh, I'm not the alcoholic blue, some blue. Circus came to town. J. Augustus Henpeck Brown bought himself a ticket for the show. Passed by all the acrobats. Saw a tamer put his head into a lion's mouth. Waited till the tamer man was through. Took his head and said, at taming wild ones, you're a bird. But there's just one thing I'd like to ask of you. Can you tame wild women? Can you tame wild women?
You made the point.
Oh, boy. This is going to be an abort one. Let's just let it go. Let's see what happens.
Wild women, you made the fox play dead, the mutant on his head. But did you ever make your wife shut up and go to bed? Oh, can you tame wild women? Because they'll always lead a sweet and peaceful life. And when you come home at three, can you pull out your key and open up the door and holler, don't talk back to me? If you can tame wild women, for the Lord's sake, tame my wife.
secret hidden there, I'll guard it with my life. There's only one mistake I made, I told it to my wife. Now everybody wants a key to my cellar, my cellar, my cellar. People who before wouldn't give me a tumble, even perfect strangers are beginning to grumble, 'cause I won't let them have a key to my cellar. They'll never get in, just let them try. They can have my money, they can have my car, they can have my wife if they want to go that far, but they can't have the key that opens my cellar. It's the whole darn world so
okay, so some records there dealing with Prohibition, a very current subject in 1920.
Yep, certainly.
And so I have a good version of that by Burt Williams, Everybody Wants a Key to My Cellar, but I don't have one by Billy Murray. So again, one of those popular tunes that got around. And the one before that, Can You Tame Wild Women? There's a Victor version with all sorts of animal sound effects in the beginning at the end to go along with the circus. In the middle, there's a great circus barker doing his thing. But no room for that on A Little Wonder.
Except for the little growls that were back there.
I didn't hear the growls. I thought it was just the machine getting stuck again.
No, I think those were, I'm not sure exactly, but I thought those were growls.
Yeah, you know, I kind of said it into the mic as we were doing it, but these are probably problems people had with the records when they bought them home and put them on their machines. Do the Little One? Do you play them much on your Little Wonder machine?
I don't play it on the Little Wonder phonograph machine.
Right.
But I have other of the period phonographs.
Crank up machines,
and I don't have the problem that we have here. So
really?
I am not at all sure why this happens here. Gremlins.
I noticed that it's on the rougher grooves, almost as if
the needle can't get through.
Yeah, there's the resistance, which is grabbing it.
Yeah, it could
and
be.
Holding it.
Yeah, it could be.
So we should take a second to also mention your website again.
Sure.
Which is littlewonderrecords.com, because really you're putting together this history of these records, and any information that could help you accumulate this would be helpful.
Right. And it comes from really startling sources. A friend of mine is an attorney, and he asked me whether there were any lawsuits in the history of Little Wonder Records. And I said, well, actually, there was one, a fairly significant one, right at the very beginning of the record company. Victor Emerson sued Henry Watterson. Henry Watterson was the founder of Little Wonder Records, and Victor Emerson sued him. Because Emerson claimed that he was entitled to some of the royalties. So there were two fairly substantial lawsuits. Well, the attorney said, well, why don't you go down and get the court papers? And I said, what court papers? And he said, well, there have to be court papers. I said, but that's from 1914. And he said, well, they have to keep them. I mean, in our legal system, all this stuff has to be preserved. Well, it turned out that Little Wonder Records are New York City, which is where I'm from, and so I mean, where I live. And so I went down to the courthouse one day, and sure enough, all of the court papers from 1914 were there.
Wow.
And the thing that was miraculous about the court papers was the original contract between Watterson and Columbia were there, because collectors didn't know how these records could ever have been started, because why would the majors let them have any access to the patents? Well, it turned out that Columbia was doing this to itself, but one of the stipulations in the contract said that all of the relationship between Watterson and Columbia had to stay secret. So here was the contract that laid out all the terms for how this record got started in the first place. So the information comes in very strange and weird ways.
Right, and that whole thing harkens back to the original patent for recording, which was attributed to Edison, But then after he let it go, it was picked up by Bell and Tainter for what eventually became Columbia, but that was a division of their company, and there were lawsuits over them stealing his patent. And but Bell and Tainter had made changes to the process, and it all gets very complicated. And they immediately Victor was a kind of like the winner of this whole fight, because they were able to just like slide right in, and the disc record was able to just come into existence because of these little legal battles, which really defined how the industry turned out, and for Little Wonder Records also.
Yep. I mean, the next records we're going to hear is another example of the way in which the information just slowly gathers about these. The next are going to be by Vernon Dalhart. There is a very big Vernon Dalhart collector, Jack Palmer, who has, in fact, just published a book about a discography of Vernon Dalhart. But I had found a little wonder that we didn't know existed, and was chatting with some friends of mine, phonograph and vintage record collectors, who asked to hear it. So I put it up on my website. They listened, and I got this email that said, Merle, you've just found another Vernon Dalhart record. Well, it turns out that, yes, indeed, I had. No one had known that he had recorded this tune, let alone that it was sitting on Little Wonder Records. I don't, however, remember which of the three we're going to hear is that particular one, but it's attributed because of the hard work of collectors. So the first one is Weep No More, My Mammy. The second is Virginia Blues. And the third is Pick Me Up and Lay Me Down in Dear Old Dixieland.
Many years ago, when I first left Mammy's knee, I didn't know how much he really meant to me. But now when Mammy cries, I realize, oh, Mammy, we know. I'll try not to keep you for remaining here. I can't retain again, I owe you. Still, I'd rather show you how much I appreciate. Before it is too late, don't bring one more. Thank you.
like a whippoorwill. As they flew to their homes across the hill, they were merrily flying to the love I knew, and I couldn't help crying, take me there with you. Take me up and lay me down in the old Dixieland. The sunshine day is born, that's where the sun was born. My heart's been all wrapped up in that land of magic charm. Carry me back to now that is on. Keep him softly singing till I get back to that ivy clinging ramshackle shack. Take me up past my family, lead me by the hand, and lay me down in the old Dixieland.
Yeah, absolutely. Certain artists, you can hear in their voice who they are, no doubt. Others, it's a little more difficult. But Vernon Dalhart, very identifiable in his voice there. Well, all right. An hour sure goes by quick, doesn't it, Merle?
Sure does.
But most of my shows, I get to fit about 15 records in. But the Little Wonder show, we get to fit in 22 because they're so short. So in a way, it's more records in the show. But
it is.
Similar amount of music. But
one could almost argue that it's sort of the perfect for the 21st century of sound bites.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. For everyone's
get
short attention
That's
span.
That's right. Get it in, get it done.
Minute and a half. All right, on to the next thing. Absolutely. So thank you once again for coming down and sharing all your records with us, Merle.
You're very welcome.
Once again, Merle's website is littlewonderrecords.com. Feel free to check in. Lots of information about the history of these records, discography, other things like the bubble books, which were made for kiddies, which we didn't even talk about.
Discographic information, labeling information. You can listen to tunes in particular from the music library. There's a little bit of stuff about phonographs. There's a lot about the advertisements that were put into publications around the period to advertise both to the trade and to consumers.
Lots of information. And, of course, you're looking for more information. So if anyone has the secret history of Little Wonder, that their father was – their great-great-grandfather was the president of the company or whatever, whoever he was, or just the shopman who said, you know, I'm going to take these papers instead of throwing them away because I could help me light my fireplace. But then he didn't light his fireplace with them. And I put them on a shelf, and who knows?
Absolutely.
Who knows? So get in touch with Merle if you have any information about the Little Wonder Records. And so that's going to do it for this edition, and I'll be back in 2 weeks with another program, probably my own stuff. So just let us know what we're going out with, Merle.
We'll go out with a tune from the California Ramblers. This is, of course, very, very late in Little Wonders, but very early for the California Ramblers, called Swanee Bluebird.
And until next time, folks, nighty night. ¶¶